Trevor, for anybody who maybe skipped over our previous episode a couple episodes ago, what was your guess? Do you have it offhand?
My guess was page 236.
236.
That Dusk speaks to Starling.
And that came several episodes ago.
Okay, it's not several. Well, hold on. It's two episodes
okay,
ago.
Okay.
So this one is two several. That was so far off. I can't believe he submitted that.
Yeah. Can you believe this guy? His ludicrous prediction, which he had no context really as to like make a guess on completely.
He's really just smacking my prediction several episodes ago.
I am. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This is episode 286. I'm Elliot, and I'm here with Trevor and Paul. I just realized the other day that I think I forget to introduce myself by name on this podcast like 90% of the time. So hopefully y'all listening out there listen to us regularly and know who we are, because we don't actually introduce ourselves very often. Today, we're going through Isles of the Emberdark, chapters 41 through 44. Paul, how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's funny you mentioned that, Elliot, because I've had multiple people that I know who have listened to our podcast and get you and Trevor confused on various things.
Sure, that happens a lot.
So maybe we do have to all we should actually say our names before every time we say something, I think is the new policy, just to make sure it's clear for everybody.
We need a narrator. Every time we say something, it's Trevor said and
yes,
Elliot replied.
Yeah, there we go. Real narrator.
I was listening to another podcast the other day, and it dawned on me, maybe a week ago while I was listening to this podcast, that these guys introduce themselves every single episode. And it just never occurred to me that should be done, but perhaps it should be.
Well, regardless, here we are and ready to dive into a couple of other chapters. We have a big announcement to make in this episode. I'm actually going to tease it a little bit. We'll get to it in a little bit here. We're going to talk about chapters a little bit. We're going to go through our summary, and then we'll have a big announcement midway through. As we get into it all, Trevor, you want to give us your typical chapter summary? You ready for that?
Yes, I will give you the typical chapter summary. So Dusk and Starling meet officially and go down the Cave of Death and don't come back yet. And that's the episode.
We really started with Trevor basically giving every detail, and now Trevor is rescinding almost every detail. So we've really had some development across the course of this book with these chapter summaries.
This trend is making me chuckle, because we're about to hit, spoilers, I guess, we're about to hit Sanderlanch territory. So I am very much looking forward to Trevor summarizing five chapters of Sanderlanch in increasingly shorter periods of time, because he's down to about 5 seconds now.
And you want to know something else that's very interesting about these? The only feedback I got on my summaries to start this book was the longer the summary, the better. I got one comment on it, one piece of feedback on it, and I apparently chucked it out the window.
Apparently. So, chapter 41. We actually have not entered the tunnel yet in chapter 41. So, yes, a lot of things revolving around the Tunnel of Death, as this part of the book is titled. But they haven't gotten in yet, and chapter 41 is more Dusk just kind of contemplating his quest. He's staring out at the Daquara and thinking, "Oh, what do I got to do here? Do I go down the tunnel? Do I work with these people? Do I have to defeat the Daquara like Kakoban did? Do you guys take anything special away from 41?
Dusk is keeping his head a lot better than I would in this situation. He is thinking analytically. He's approaching the problem the way he should. And he's trying his best for starships and infinite snakes and perhaps a second perpendicularity. He's taking that all in stride or as best he can. So that's what I got out of it.
I appreciate that we do get kind of a cool culmination or similarity here with this like legendary story we get hinted at the get-go of the story. I really like it. It feels like a good complete picture. It's a good way that Brandon has been able to kind of add sentiment almost to a single book story, not like a big massive series, but kind of putting that in there through Dusk's character. I think it's really cool. I've been a big fan. It feels like that'll be a cool situation. And Trevor's absolutely right. It is crazy. He's thinking quite rationally, and that's good because that's why he is here and not me and not Trevor and not Elliot. You know, we'll let Six of the Dusk we'll watch, we'll commentate, we'll let him tackle this one. So
he's very methodical, which clearly he's learned from Patchy and having to be very careful, very thought through about every action, every step he takes. I like the character of Dusk a lot. I sometimes feel it just in my life that I have to rush with things, that I have to keep up with everything, that I have to have a quick response to everything everybody says. And here's Dusk just doing life at his own pace and not caring what everyone else thinks and taking his time to think through it and not acknowledging every single sentence with a response. So some of my favorite parts are where he's not even talking and the narrator is just, you know, inside Dusk's head going, and that comment was not a question, so Dusk did not need to respond. It's like, I think I need to do that more in my life.
My favorite phrase was a Starling point of view in chapter 44, where she described it as, he understood the rules of conversation, but chose not to abide by them. He didn't care, even though he did understand, which I thought was funny.
Chapter 42, though, way more in this chapter than maybe 41. So we should probably jump into 42, because 42 goes back to Starling and her crew. In fact, now's actually a great time to pull up some book art. You guys ready to see some art?
Always.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. Let's see how fast I can click these buttons.
Just share the portrait. Screen. There was a description of
a portrait. Yeah. Trevor, whoever's in control here. Yeah, pull up my screen. There we go. Okay. Here's some book art that's in the book. Lovely, yet again. I think this portrait of Starling on the right side of the screen here is actually one of my favorites in the book. It just gives you such a clear visual of what she looks like with that pale white skin, the white hair. I don't know, something about that one there I think is particularly interesting. I think I like best the manacles that she's got. In my imagination just had those as like solid metal bands or bracers, and these are much more interesting. They've got kind of a design to them. They've got
they're elegant.
Yeah.
It's like it fits into a beautiful, you know, outfit.
Right.
They're stylish.
And you can see it in the piece on the left too, the same kind of manacles working into it. So yeah, interesting.
She looks older than I thought she would.
I was gonna say the exact same thing, Trevor. I love the white, like pale skin, white hair, white eyes is awesome. I think it's such a cool aesthetic. But yeah, she looks a lot older than I expected. That may be skewed a bit by listening to the audiobook, I wonder, Trevor, because I think they make her sound a bit, the audiobook narrator is a bit childish sounding. Not in a bad way, but just very cheery, very childish kind of mentality is what it sounds like. That's the energy it gives off. So I definitely was picturing a younger looking Starling. But Yeah, I think it looks very cool, kind of mercurial or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good word. I was thinking she seems a little too somber or serious to me.
I agree.
She definitely has a very kind of positive, almost bouncy vibe about her. And I don't know if I get that from these pictures, but it does give her maybe a little bit more gravitas that she probably would have just from being a dragon, you know.
This does reinforce my idea that Brandon Sanderson's dragons are simply just Tolkien's elves.
Yeah.
And
yes,
I really feel that Sanderson didn't want to do elves, so he did dragons and made them elves instead. Starling feels very elf-like to me.
That's a really good way of putting it. I was going to say, yeah, it feels like this was a candid taking of her, not like her taking a picture, if that makes sense. Like, if you took a selfie with Starling, I feel like she'd, like, smile and look really happy or something. That's, like, the personality I'm getting. But this was like she was turning around and someone snapped a photo. Kind of candid. But yeah, she, from the book, the voice in the book feels very cheery, peppy, childlike, whimsy, you know, all these things. And this is very, like, I don't know, it's, yeah, yeah. It's what I think of with any kind of ancient type character. Trevor, you nailed it. It's Tolkien elf, like, aesthetic. This is like a Galadriel's sister or something like that, you know, like that kind of situation.
It's Galadriel's younger, spunky sister.
Yes. The exactly. Rebellious.
Yeah.
Galadriel's rebellious, actually. Maybe a lot of it rebellious. But yeah, this piece on the left, though, I actually got a lot out of pulling this up off of the copper mine, because in the book, this one on the left is split across two pages and you actually lose quite a bit in the fold of the paper. It goes like right through Adatil's face. And so it's actually a little hard to get a sense of this whole picture. So I thought it was pretty cool. And that is a scene we're about to jump into here. So that was what made me think of pulling that up there.
Wait, sorry, Elliot, can you bring it back right quick? I had one question.
I can.
On that other art piece.
Audio listeners are really getting a lot out of this segment.
Yeah, right? I know, right? They love
listening to me pull up different screens.
Well, I just wanted to double check. Okay, so I think I know who everyone is in this picture.
Oh,
but yeah. I want to double check. I want to get the right kind of mental picture for people. So I'm certainly assuming, especially since we have the side by side, we're starting with Starling on the left.
Surely.
Then we have Zeet in the next there. Definitely. Feather Boy. You mentioned Adatil there. And then I'm assuming that's Ed on the end, our Arcanist. Is that right? Or
and he's okay. Comforting Leonor.
Gotcha. Okay, that's Leonor. Okay, okay.
And it took me a second to figure out that was Ed on the end because of the hat. And I remember they joke about that. Like the very first time we meet Ed is that he's the wizard on
right.
The,
it's
on the
it's his wizard hat, but you're not allowed to call it a wizard hat.
Right. It's a wizard hat. You're not allowed to call that. And it's not pointy. It's floppy. Like that's specifically described that way. But you look at that and you're like, who's the house elf? Oh yeah. It's our Arcanist. Got it. It's Ed.
It is a very odd hat. I was also off put by it. I didn't question it though. And I'm a little surprised because well, if I saw someone wearing that, like, normally, I feel like I would be surprised. It does look like it doesn't actually go on his head. Like, someone's like placed a bag on his head.
Yeah,
he's wearing a t-shirt on his head.
Yes, that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah.
Now, Starling in this episode says to Dusk that he asked some question, and Starling says, well, that's a question for an Arcanist. And Dusk says, well, what's an Arcanist? And Starling basically says, well, they're wizards, but you're not really allowed to call them wizards. They're Arcanists, and they specifically prefer the term, which I thought was funny.
I didn't remember well enough the description between Adatil and Leonor to pick them apart until you mentioned it, Elliot. But then I realized at the very end that Leonor is holding a mask. So I think that's your kind of clue there if you didn't remember the physical descriptions.
Yes. Leonora is Mawlish, so she has her mask, which is part of the problem because she's a deserter from the Mawlish army who they've just bumped into.
All right. When are we going to talk about Starling talking to Dusk or vice versa, I should say?
Are we going to go straight there?
I think we're ready.
Yeah, I'm excited, that's for sure.
Okay. I would like to announce that we have arrived at the answer to our quiz question. The quiz question that I have taunted you guys with this entire book started off with, we had a little competition, was on what page will Dusk speak to Starling? And I ordered that question very intentionally.
Can I phrase my feelings before we reveal?
Go ahead.
Okay. I am fully prepared to lose to Paul. However, I am terrified that he nailed it. And so I am sitting here waiting to hear how much Paul beat me. And if he nailed it, then I'm going to be quite sad.
Trevor, for anybody who maybe skipped over our previous episode a couple episodes ago, what was your guess? Do you have it offhand?
Give me 1 second. My guess was page 236.
236.
That Dusk speaks to Starling.
And that came several episodes ago.
Okay, it's not several. Whoa, hold on. Well, it's two episodes
okay,
ago.
Okay.
So two... one is two several. That was so far off. I can't believe he submitted ago. That.
Yeah. Can you believe this guy? It is ludicrous. Prediction which he had no context really as to like make a guess on completely.
He's really just it smacking there. My prediction several episodes ago.
I will tell you right now, as of my calculation, which we can debate this a little bit, but I think it's fairly decisive. At the end of chapter 42, Dusk finally addresses Starling. They've been in the same room or space several times. Starling even spoke to Dusk pretty much really closely to where you originally guessed, Trevor. Uh-huh. But Dusk, being his taciturn self, has not addressed her yet until the end of chapter 42 when he says, on page 310, hold on, here we go. Come, I will show you the Cave of Death.
Cool.
And it does not specifically say Dusk said to Starling, but the way I imagine this scene going, Danger's in the midst of it here. They're debating on, you know, oh, is Starling going to be Dusk's assistant going into the cave? And finally they're like, yes. And so I imagine Dusk turning to Starling and saying, okay, come, I will show you the Cave of Death.
And he's not speaking to Danger because Danger's seen it.
Right. So, with that being our answer, Paul, you want to share what your guess was?
I'd be happy to go ahead and clear the air, Trevor. I did not nail it.
Okay. So
it's not like I guessed 310 and it was 310. I was closer than you, so haha, brag, haha, fun, I win, yada, yada. And I will say, I do agree that it was 310. While I was listening to the book, I thought it was in the next chapter. I thought 43 was the first time. That one kind of slipped by me a bit. It's a little ambiguous, but you're right. Looking at it, absolutely is that moment. But my guess was actually in chapter 44. Okay. And I get, but close, pretty close on pages. I was 15 off. I guessed 325 was my guess. Page 325.
Wow.
So I was really excited when I heard 43. I'm like, let's go. I can't believe it. Like, it's so close. I don't actually remember when those moments happened in 43, but that is quite close to page 325. Like, we're getting really, really close there. But so I was 15 pages off with my guess of 325.
So, Paul, I was very impressed with your prediction abilities. Yes, knowing nothing about the book after the first couple of chapters there. 15 pages off. Well done. Well done. I was very much more impressed with someone else. Me? And no, Well, I'm very
I was only 74
not many people on this podcast, Elliot.
No, the person I am very impressed with, so impressed, is the winner of our book giveaway challenge. So in addition to this quiz question that I gave for you guys, we decided to do something fun on this podcast we have not done before and make it into a challenge and have everyone submit their guesses of how far off they thought you guys were going to be with this question. And to the winner, we're going to be sending a physical copy of this gorgeous book with all the art and everything in it and some super fun surprises that we've talked about before, like the dark pages and things like that. We have a winner, and I can tell you now who that is. And this person, their total number of pages they were off of your answers. So they put in answers of how many pages they thought they were off. The total combined for the two of you, 11 pages off with their guess. Combined for the two of you.
That's impressive. So they probably said I was, four away, and I was like, that's probably how much faith they had in me. And then they thought Trevor was much further. But
they probably had me at zero and you at 11.
Okay. Paul, you think you're joking, and I'm going to tell you now, it's even better than you are jokingly thinking it is.
Oh, no.
Let's go.
Nailed you on the spot, Paul, zero pages off. They guess you would be 15 pages off exactly.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty epic.
And they probably put Paul as a tiebreaker.
They did.
Nice. Well done.
And so this person, the winner of our book giveaway, is PJ Townsend. PJ Townsend, I will have already reached out to you by the time this podcast airs to let you know that you are the winner of our book contest. We will reach out to you over email and see if we can get an address from you to mail you your book that you have just won with a very impressive predictability score. I will say too, this was very competitive, way more competitive than I thought. We had 14 people within 35 pages or less total across the two of you.
Wow.
There were quite a few people
Close. Like the podium finishes, what's their delta pages? So like the top five.
They were very close. So PJ wins it with 11 total pages, spot on with Paul, 11 pages off for you, Trevor. Second place is actually our good friend Kiffin. He has been on the podcast before. It's been several years, but Kiffin had a total of 17 pages. He was 10 pages off with you, Trevor, and 7 pages off with Paul. Our third place is Elizabeth. Elizabeth Emmelin, I believe is your name, with a total of 19 off. So three very close.
That is really impressive.
Cool.
So,
impressive guesses. Yeah. This is a unique format, so I'm super impressed.
I will say, Trevor, I think I don't have these numbers in front of me, but I was looking at them earlier. If I averaged everybody's guesses, I think you were actually the more predictable. I don't know how that makes you feel, but
they more accurately guessed how far off he would be.
Correct. On average overall. So Paul, you were less predictable and Trevor, you were more predictable.
Me and PJ though, we got the same wavelength.
I would love to accept that as a compliment. However, because of how off I was and for how many people to successfully guess how off I was, I don't think is a compliment.
If it makes you feel, there were some people that were like 180 pages off of your guess, so they had no faith in you whatsoever, and
they thought my meme said like page 10 instead of page whatever 230 whatever it said.
So anyway, all of that, and we finally, 310 pages into our story, have our protagonist Dusk addressing Starling.
Cool. Thanks for organizing that, Elliot. That was fun.
Yeah, sure was. Man, what do I do with my winnings from this? What should I you know,
don't spend it all in one place.
Okay. I'll try not to, but.
Alrighty. We enter the Cave of Death and Danger's drone follows us in. And I think it was really enjoyable, the scene of all three of them finally together and talking, whereas Dusk is trying to get a little bit of information out of Starling, but also trying to figure out how to get Starling alone so that they can talk. And then Starling realizing this at the same time that Dusk is trying to accomplish it, of like, oh, he has more to say. He really wants to speak with me. He just can't do it in front of Danger. I understand. So finally getting all three characters on the same page, literally, pun intended, and having a three-way conversation between them, I very much enjoyed it.
One question before we go too much further forward. So I wanted to go, I didn't want to gloss past this too much. So in chapter 42, Chrysalis can mimic their voices. We talk about this a bit. They talk about it some crazy sleepless tech here.
Yep.
On this. And this was one where I'm like, what I want is an Elliot engineering explanation behind this, but I'm like, I don't think this is engineering. I think this is sci-fi biology, which you can't really, you know, so I don't know. If anyone is an expert in sci-fi biology, let us know, you know. But that's what I found myself wanting on this, was like, how does this work? Real quick, like, hold on, what's going on here? Chris is like talking for everyone. I don't know, an interesting situation here.
And these would have to be complicated bugs if you think about it, because this is apparently a convincing enough to be mistaken for the person mimicking of their voice.
Yeah.
Which you can't do that with buzzing insect wings.
Right.
It's got to be like your little bug has grown lungs and a voice box.
Yes.
That's creepy.
Or an electric speaker, one of the two.
Maybe.
Maybe they've got like a good, like, you know, DJ electronic, like soundboard, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That they're playing off of.
Hey, Paul. Elliot's not allowed to answer this. Is Chrysalis going to betray us by the end of the book?
I don't think so.
I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay. What's your reasoning for this? I'm curious.
On a scale of Zitzi to Chrysalis, I'm way more the bird feather man. That he... Starling tells him to at least give Chrysalis as an individual a chance. And he's trying. But Chrysalis just seems to have way too much... way too many motives to not stick with the crew. I think she's in too much danger and she feels too scared and will ditch the crew at first chance.
I understand that. You're right. We could go easily one of two ways. Sleepless aren't that bad and sleepless are that bad. I don't know which way we're going. My instinct is that Chrysalis is not going to betray us. And that, you know, Chrysalis is gonna work things out a bit, help at least at a minimum, even if it's selfishly motivated to save her own skin. But I think Chrysalis is gonna be legit.
It's funny because ZZ and Starling kind of have this exact conversation in chapter 42,
yeah,
where Z is going hard on, we cannot trust this sleepless. Look, she had mimics of our voices already prepared, which takes time to breed those little bugs that way. Clearly, she was planning to betray us this whole time.
Well, and she said she's found them useful in the past.
Yes.
And Z's like, for what now? Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. But Starling comes back with a pretty hard push in the opposite direction, which I like the quotes, kind of the vibes that she was throwing out here in this chapter of her line. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's kind of lengthy, but the takeaway was basically, don't judge a person based on the maybe perfectly valid atrocities that their people or their authorities have committed. And I thought, ooh, that's good. Like, don't lump somebody in the category of, oh, you're them.
I
too fast.
Completely agree with that sentiment. However, I think Chrysalis has done plenty already.
Oh, I think you're right.
As an individual, she repeatedly does her sleepless thing while the crew has all explicitly asked her to stop doing her sleepless thing. So I'm all for that sentiment. I just don't think Chrysalis has earned that.
I agree with you, especially with the heavy implication that maybe Chrysalis is the assassin that killed the president of the Mawish.
Right. But right after that reveal, she does claim that I've taken the oath of the first or whatever, and I'm not going to swear, or I'm not going to harm another individual. But she's also like perfectly comfortable exploiting the other crew members' privacy for her own gain and just looking out for herself.
Right.
Which I understand, but that still is subtracting some trust points for me.
I totally understand that, and I'm not going to act like it doesn't make her Chrysalis like less trustworthy. However, if you were Chrysalis in this situation, whether or not you were going to use their voices, do you think you would? I'm like, I imagine these aren't the only people she has voice boxes sitting in the back storage for, you know, like as a sleepless. I'm like, imagine, especially if you're on a crew for an extended amount of time, especially in the Ember Dark or doing all this like risky stuff, and especially being a sleepless who, like, if some of the wrong people find you, they're going to try to kill you and wipe you out, you know. I imagine she'd have these on standby in case anything comes up and it might prove useful. So to me, it didn't feel like a major, like, oh, she's trying to sneak around behind our backs. Maybe if she wanted to be nice, it probably would be nicer to ask, hey, is it okay if I, you know, copy your voice? Are you cool with that? You know, I promise.
Identity theft is not a joke, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're so right. So, yeah, maybe a little unethical from Chrysalis, but to me, I haven't written it off as Chrysalis is definitely betraying the bunch.
Well, it comes off to me as almost just a, this is going to sound like I'm defending Chrysalis too much, but it almost comes off to me as just the sleepless don't understand these kinds of boundaries. It's like,
I agree with you.
Personal space is that, oh, you have a problem with that? Oh, sorry. I'm everywhere. So invading your personal space doesn't even occur to me.
I agree with you. Like, the sleepless's instinct is spread out around the ship and have ears in every corner. That's just what sleepless do. But I would argue that she should give more weight to the crew's opinion than she does.
It does come down, I think, to Starling's optimism. Do you take the path of hoping the best for someone and opening yourself up to maybe a pretty devastating betrayal, or do you guard yourself a little more, maybe at the expense of the individual in question? There's a couple other notes I had in chapter 42 before we move on and talk a little more about the tunnel. There's an offhand mention that Starling doesn't need food and water for extended periods of time because she can metabolize investiture into sustenance.
Yep.
Which when I first read that, went, oh, yeah, cool. We've seen that before. Lyft. But then when I thought about it 2 seconds later, I was going, well, wait a second. That's actually the inverse of what Lyft does. Lyft goes the other way.
Yeah.
She eats food and turns it into magic. Starling turns magic into food. So, I don't know if that's important, but I'm noting it down.
Put them together in the same room and you get an infinite power loop. It's like plugging an extension cord into itself. You just get infinite power, right?
Totally. It made me actually wonder about Lyft's ancestry. We don't really know who her parents are, right?
Is that true? We get a flashback of her mom, like once. Or we get a flashback of her talking about her mom, something like that.
One of the two. And again, this is the opposite power that Starling is claiming that she has. It's sounding like just as her nature as a dragon. It sounds like any dragon should be able to do this.
Yeah.
And so this is the opposite power that Lyft has, but it's still like a small part of me is now wondering, is Lyft 10% dragon?
I don't know.
100% dragon?
If we're judging off of simply characteristics of the characters, I don't think this, or I don't know if this probably doesn't work out in the timeline, but Lyft does seem to have that very childlike nature, probably from being, you know, permanently a child. Same way that Starling has that, and that's like the only other character that I feel like I've seen that amount of childishness, sort of. That's very loose. That's the same way I got to Shalana's Light Song back in back in the early days, was just comparing some generalized characteristics of characters across books. So
see, but that kind of comparison just makes me feel like this is confirmed that Lyft is dragon.
That's right. Well, I am one for one on those predictions so far. So I'm
I don't know about that. One for one for the ones that have stuck around as jokes. I think you've had, anyway.
Okay.
Lyft.
Right.
I mean, Lyft had a direct blessing from cultivation, did she not? And cultivation is dragon.
Right.
Yes.
So it's just maybe it's dragon powers that have been conveyed onto her. You've been touched by
a dragon, therefore you can eat a lot of food or whatever.
That probably makes way more sense than Lyft is a dragon.
Lyft's parents were also dragons, you know. That'd be kind of crazy.
I'll just leave it with one parting shot that, as far as we know, I think Lyft has not reached the age at which dragons like become dragon-esque. So
that's true.
Perfectly possible that when Lyft turns, was it 30 or something like that at the beginning of this book, that she just sprouts wings and we could have a dragon.
And then she goes flying around with her little Larkin or whatever.
What's
the Larkin's name? I don't remember.
Cheery Cheery?
There you go.
Chimmy Cheery.
You forget that.
Cheery Cheery is going to be the crab dragon and she's going to be the real dragon. Stormlight 6, spoilers, warning.
Surprise. I had one more thought for you guys before we move on from this chapter. At one point, Ed rambles about shards. And we've rambled about shards a couple times trying to figure out what's going on the planet Dromanad. He is talking about, okay, we're seeing invested birds, we're seeing these powers. Clearly a shard was involved here. And then he lists off a few, none of which were autonomy, which is where we've landed pretty firmly.
Right.
That we think Patchy is an avatar of autonomy, and this is all autonomy's doing. Ed doesn't even seem to consider that. Do you guys think that's strange?
Well, doesn't Starling have more information than this? From what's his toes? Zysis? Zysis mentions.
Yes.
What's his toes? Autonomy. Wow.
Zysis did, yes. And yeah, Starling, I think, does not correct him or chime in here. Is she even in the room?
Right. I assume she's in the room. But yeah, Zysis mentions autonomy by name.
Yes.
And to Starling. And then Starling doesn't correct him here. So.
But then he makes another comment, which struck me as odd. he says, oh yeah, and nobody even knows where virtuosity is.
Yeah.
Here's why I thought that was odd, because we know where virtuosity is.
Yes. Finish your sentence.
Because we've read Yumi and the Nightmare Painter, which I'm going to drop some minor spoilers on that. So if you haven't read Yumi and the Nightmare Painter, maybe skip ahead a minute or two.
It's chapter two.
Oh, okay. Chapter two. So just go read the first few chapters of Yumi. We're told in Yumi that virtuosity has splintered herself.
Yes.
Which, if we're assuming, like we have been, that Isles of the Emberdark is the furthest in the future point we've seen yet.
Yes.
Does this imply that they don't know? Like, it's not general knowledge that virtuosity has splintered herself, that's unknown?
That is interesting.
Go ahead, Paul, and then I'll say two things.
Oh, no, go ahead, Trevor.
Okay, two things. It's very easy to move Yumi and the Nightmare Painter in the timeline. Extremely easy. Well, way easier to push Yumi and the Nightmare Painter 5 years before this book, 5 years after this book, whatever. Maybe this is where Hoid disappeared to, is as a coat rack in Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. Spoilers. Second, I would hesitate to claim that virtuosity splintering herself equals dying. And you could claim that virtuosity left a splinter of herself on the planet and moved on autonomy style.
Okay. Okay. All of this, I think there's a lot of options, a lot of possibilities here of what this could be. My brain wants to jump to what you were kind of getting at of, this makes me think Yumi is later in the timeline than maybe I've heard some people say.
Right. I think before this book, everybody assumed that Yumi and Sunlit and Tress were like shortly after Stormlight or whatever.
Right.
But now that we've expanded the timeline, presumably,
right,
so far out, now it could be anywhere in that window.
That's where my head is going to, is I think Yumi is now in my mind much closer to, maybe concurrent with, Isles of the Emberdark and not immediately following Stormlight 5, something sure. Like that. Just because they don't know. Because it seems like they don't know what has happened to Virtuosity, and I feel like the splintering of a shard, even if that's not the death of a shard, is going to be something that Ed would know about.
Yeah, this has me confused now. My initial instinct was, oh no, this is just like, I didn't remember the details from Yumi, first of all. So I was like, oh, this is just far enough in the future where Virtuosity could have gone somewhat place else or done something else or whatever. But then I didn't remember she was splintered. So I'm like, yeah, Ed should definitely know that. So yeah, I feel like doesn't that kind of safely put Yumi like later on inevitably, right? Or something or is just different. Yeah, or close, different, hidden knowledge or something.
I didn't bat an eye at this because I quickly wrote the splintering off as Virtuosity is running around the Cosmere throwing her flower petals everywhere. You get some art, you get some art, you get some art. And splintering yourself is no longer like taboo, if you will. That you can just throw your shard around if you're Virtuosity and create an art world and create an art world. And that's what she's doing, or it, or whatever.
Yes. So, yeah, you guys out there, listeners, viewers, tell us what you guys think about Virtuosity and the shards and the timeline. I'm particularly interested in the timeline of this book, and we'll revisit this when we get to the end of the book as well. We still have a little bit more. Yeah, watch out for spoilers, like in the YouTube comments. Don't spoil things for Trevor, Paul, or other readers. But any thoughts up until this point about Virtuosity or other shards? Love to hear them. Okay, what's left in these chapters? Just the Cave of Death, which we already kind of talked about.
Yes, the Cave of Death. We walk in with Starling, Dusk, and a drone. And I don't know, we kind of just chat about life for like a chapter. And that's where we kind of end it.
And Dusk does pull the pretty sneaky switch on Colonel Dager with the go far enough into the tunnel that when he intentionally trips the whatever giant Venus flytrap thing that eats the drone, blacking him out, giving him like a full hour of the walk back to talk things over with Starling, was pretty clever. Starling yep. realizes this. Starling also gives Dusk a fairly candid and, as far as we can tell, honest take on the situation, which I think Dusk appreciates.
Yeah. Dusk says that thanks for not lying to me. Everybody right. else lies to me. And even if your news is bad, I'd rather that than lie to me. So thanks.
But she's also very direct about, you know, hey, I'm kind of in some ways here to use you just like these other guys. I'm here on a larger mission. I'm trying to influence the politics of all this and the discovery of a perpendicularity. So I'm not here to just, you know, give you charity.
Yeah, it was a very interesting and candid conversation. Like, yeah, I think I'm better than these other people, but like also would be here for similar-ish reasons. Like it's still not what you want, and I'll be honest with you about that. And yeah, the honesty goes a long way, especially with a character like Dusk. Like I feel like he really, like, that was probably the best way to gain his trust, actually. It's like, no, I'm not on your side, but at least I'm telling you I'm not on your side, instead of trying to either fake being on your side or whatever, you know. So yeah.
And that kind of gets us to the end of chapter 44. At the end of chapter 44, they're at that point. They're talking it through. The drone is down. They've got a little bit of breathing room. And that's kind of where we leave it. Any other thoughts, you guys?
Is there a second perpendicularity?
I'm going to say yes. And that's going to be the crazy Sander Lynch. I'm just going to go ahead and go with it. I don't know how it works. That's my hesitation. I don't know how that can work.
Is it
be the case?
Is it to second of the sun, or is it back to first of the sun, or is it to, you know, Scadrial? I don't know.
I think it's either going to go someplace. I feel like I mentioned something about this a couple episodes back. I think it's either going to go someplace new, like that we have never been before. Yeah. I don't know what, like, just insert new planet here, like teaser for another book or something. I don't know. Or yeah, someplace like iconic. I don't know, Scadrial. I don't think Scadrial seems hard to predict, because I don't feel like it would pop up right in the middle of one of our major stories, like right. Roshar or Scadrial. But it certainly could happen. I could totally see it popping up in Scadrial. But yeah, somewhere else. I do think it's going to be somewhere distant in some way. But yeah, I don't have much evidence for that. These are just hunches, I guess.
So briefly looking back at Six of the Dusk novella, there's a map of Dromonad system, and there's first of the sun, second of the sun, third of the sun, fourth of the sun. They're all planets. I assume this goes to second of the sun. And so, yes, I think there's a perpendicularity. Yes, I think you go somewhere new, which would be second of the sun. And so Dusk leads them to some other unfortunate planet, and they get squashed by the Malwish instead of Drum, or instead of First of the Sun. However, I'm still conflicted on how First of the Sun gets out of this. I mean, everybody is telling Dusk and the entire Dromanat system, hey, you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. You've got really valuable birds, nice perpendicularity, in a nice spot for this huge cold war between Roshar and Scadrial. Tough luck for you. We're going to set up camp. I can't help but wonder, and I don't know how this would work out for like the theme of the book and autonomy preparing him for this or whatever that we're going to go down. I can't help but wonder the only way out of this for First of the Sun is to destroy their perpendicularity. What if they destroyed their perpendicularity and put themselves on pause for 200 years while they caught up? Like, that's what Dusk is asking for, right? Dusk is trying to look for the solution to don't talk to the ones above, don't talk to the Rosharans, you know, let us do our thing and we'll get there eventually. What if they just destroyed their perpendicularity? Then they're not reachable by any economical means, and they're not strategic anymore. I don't know how they do that, but that's my only thought.
Paul, any thoughts there? I have plenty, but I better keep my mouth shut. So, Paul, anything in response to Trevor?
I do. I won our little guessing competition as to when Dusk would speak to Starling.
Yeah.
I kind of think Trevor's cooking with the real predictions, though. I kind of think he's onto something. I feel like obviously this is all circling around perpendicularities in some way. So that makes me think we're either going to learn something new about perpendicularities, see some kind of weird new perpendicularity, or something is going to happen to a perpendicularity in some way. I could totally see the situation he's talking about where they like destroy their perpendicularity or something like that. I feel like there's a way for that to be super fitting for the story and also crazy where we're like, hold on, you can just do that or something, you know, something like that something like that. That one, the only thing that makes me nervous about that, and this is a little unfair, I'm like, okay, if they destroy a perpendicularity, then I'm like, what if everyone goes and destroys their own perpendicularity? That's my first thought, you know, which is not going to happen.
Faster than light.
Yeah, I'm sure Brandon Sanderson didn't write that, but it's like, that's where my thought goes as we've kind of like expanded and made this world so like tangible in a way. But that's me being a little bit ridiculous. So I will take that thought captive there. So, but yeah, I like the idea. Absolutely.
What if Dusk has to destroy the perpendicularity from the Ember Dark side and forever cuts himself off from First of the Sun?
I think Dusk being the one to do it is so fitting because he's so independent. Like whatever side he's on, he's like, yeah, I'm chill, you know, even in the Ember Dark. Like he figured it all out, essentially, how to get around, how to hunt and all this like stuff. So he'd now totally do that. He feels like a misfit anyways. So
back to my original caveat, though, I have no idea how that would fit into the whole autonomy is preparing you for this mission thing. If autonomy's whole thing is to make them self-sufficient and achieve themselves, why did he put the perpendicularity there in the first place? Autonomy, like, why not just leave them alone? Like, that's the whole point, is to create the perpendicularity just for them to destroy it later. I don't understand that.
And the theme we've come back to a bunch throughout this book has been the how do I find my place in a rapidly changing world? Yeah. How do I respond to new technology and new traditions and new methods? And do I just wash the old methods away in the river? They're gone. Or do I hold on to them? It's almost like the theoretical. So ending you're talking about there of close the perpendicularity would be we sequester ourselves into our old ways or something like that, which is
right.
Yes, interesting. I have way more thoughts I would love to jump in on this conversation with, but I definitely cannot because we need to read a few more pages first.
Haha.
Elliot's carrying the burden of knowledge, this book.
This moment right here, probably the most difficult, actually, of I have about a 30-minute conversation I would love to jump into. And yeah. One, we don't have time for that. And two, we don't have the page count to do that just yet. Although we are rapidly approaching the end of this book.
Okay, now, the real question you can answer is, do we get this conversation in 2 episodes or 3 episodes?
Is that fair to ask?
Well, he doesn't have to answer it. I'm going to ask it anyway.
I will tell you, we have exactly 3 episodes left of this whole book.
Right. So do we talk about it in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, Elliot?
We will be talking about this in 3 weeks. Definitely 3 weeks. We need to finish the book and then we can analyze.
Okay. What's our chapters for next week?
And with that, yes, we should move on to the chapters that we have for next week. Next week, we are going to cover chapters 45 through 48. Another set of 4 chapters. I'm excited to dive into them with you guys. So thank you very much for joining me, Paul and Trevor.
See ya.
Toodles.